From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of February 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostert. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the House Ag Committee is set to discuss new trade rules developed by CFTC. Speaking of which, the Intercontinental Exchange, that's ICE, has decided to more closely monitor the number of cotton contracts any one entity can buy or sell. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll take a look at plant health and fungicides for corn on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Take a look at the numbers as they settled up in Chicago at the CME Group on this Friday afternoon. Futures in the March wheat pit at 853 and three quarters, down 5 1/4 for the soft red. May at 884 and three quarters, 5 1/4 lower. And July at $9.08 1/4, down 3 3/4 from Chicago. In Kansas City, March contract at 942 and three quarters for the hard red, down 6 1/4 cents a bushel. March corn back in Chicago up 16 cents today, $6.78 1/2. The May at 689 1/4, up 16. July 694 1/4, 16 1/4 higher. In September futures, $6.44, up 15 cents. December corn at $6.03 1/4, up 13 1/4, and December contract at that actually is the December up 13 1/4. The March at 611 1/2, up 11 1/2. March soybean futures at $14.33 1/2, down 2. The May at $14.44 1/3 lower. July at $14.50, down 1 cent. And then we turn to the green with the August contract in the beans at $14.22 1/2, up 1 1/4, and November at $13.69, up 3 1/2 cents. Bean meal at $3.83.20, down $3.20. Bean oil at $58.98, up 20 on the afternoon. February live cattle at $108.25, a nickel higher. The April futures were down 17 1/2 at $113.02 1/2, and the March feeder cattle at 125.50 lower on the day. April futures at 126.72 1/2, down 57 1/2. February lean hogs at $84.50, 100 pounds up $1.15. You're listening to Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, March contract at $88.94 a barrel, down $1.59. Ethanol at $2.41 3/10, up 4 9/10. Natural gas at $4.31 1/10, down 2 6/10. And the heating oil or diesel fuel, 5 cents lower at $2.71 6/10. Gold futures for the day finished up at $1,348.30 an ounce. They were down $4. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,074, just about 12 points higher. The U.S. dollar at 78.05 is up 0.30 on the afternoon. And the CRB index is down 2.09 at 338.91. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. They say skies should be sunny, the high near 24 degrees. Southwest winds around 10 miles an hour. They'll gust as high as 15 this afternoon. And then tonight, mostly cloudy, a low about 16 degrees. Southwest winds around 10 miles an hour, gusting as high as 15 again. And Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high near 28. West-southwest winds between 9 and 13, gusting as high as 16 miles an hour. Saturday night, cloudy skies, a low of 20. Sunday, a 30% chance of snow. Cloudy, a high of 31. Sunday night, a 40% chance of snow. Cloudy, a low around 21 degrees. On Monday, a 40% chance of snow. Cloudy, a low of 21. And Monday night, a 30% chance of snow. Cloudy, and a high of 26 degrees. On Tuesday, should be partly sunny, the high near 12. Wednesday, a chance of snow during the day, partly sunny, a high near 15 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the hour, and we talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. It is time to take a look at the agricultural futures markets. As he does each and every Friday, Mike Zuzulo is on the phone line with us. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in beautiful Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hey there, Todd. Doing well. Thank you.
I bet your grounds are white around you just like they are here.
Oh, my gosh. We were very thankful for all the sleet we got because it didn't stick to the trees or the power lines, and I think it probably cut our totals on the snow down by 6 or 7 inches. So I can't complain this week. A lot of people had a lot worse.
Indeed, they did. Let's talk a lot about the marketplace. What'd you make of the week's trade to begin with?
Well, I think to begin with, the trade wanted to try and find a little bit more of a risk-taking mindset with the outside markets not breaking and the dollar finding no real buying until middle of the week. It looked like that the trade was thinking maybe the Egyptian problem would settle down and we would come out of this pretty much unscathed. So it looked like the stocks and the commodities both took off early in the week. I think they revisited that and probably held back a little bit more towards the later part of the week when Egypt and some of the other countries in the Middle East still had problems and a lot of uncertainty was still there. So I think that had the outside markets influencing the grain trade. But other than that, I think most of the trade was based upon spread trading where people were jockeying and positioning based upon the spread, based upon the technicals. We saw the bull spread really kick in the corn after the weekly export sales showed a marketing year high. The bear spread really kicked in on the beans. I think that was due to maybe a little bit more progress looked to be made next week in the South American harvest in Brazil getting started. The March beans up 35.5 for the week, but the November up 46 for the week. So the front end gave way to the new crop and the beans. The other spread that was big in terms of price action and a lot of trading was the wheat corn spread. It vacillated from the 175 level all the way up to the $2 level, and by today's close, it was back down around the 175 level again.
Take a longer range look at the marketplace and maybe incorporating the decisions that producers will be making at the end of this month. So crop insurance decisions by the 15th of March, they can't start making them until the first day of March. Is there anything that producers are really wanting or should do besides watch the trade as long as it stays very high this month and to buy crop insurance and give themselves a nice put for the new crop?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that comes into play right there, what you said. The higher we go, especially the first two-thirds of the month, if we can keep going higher into the agricultural outlook meeting on the 24th and 25th, that's going to be two-thirds of the trade or almost three-quarters of the trade, so it's less likely that the finishing part of February is going to hurt the average much. So if we can continue to go higher, I think it makes a lot of sense to evaluate a revenue product, and if you have good yields across your farm, maybe look at enterprise units because that tends to bring down the price, and look at that as a put position. In other words, if we have a big break in the market, and especially the month of October, November, when that fall price is figured, then you're looking at a situation where you could have a natural put in place. As far as what I heard this week was clients from Illinois who had gone up to the top crop workshop, a top producer workshop up in Chicago, had talked about how they had met people out on the western Missouri, eastern Kansas line, and those producers were talking about planting beans into hay fields. Other contacts in Chicago were telling me that they had been out west up into the Dakotas, and the excitement for the beans were there as well. So what I'm picking up is that we're getting more of the non-traditional corn and bean acres probably moving into the beans at these price levels. And if we're going to see any transfer of wheat acres into corn, we probably have to put more price onto the corn in relation to the beans at this stage. Not going to be hard to do if Mother Nature keeps the southern plains dry, however.
Did you read or listen to what Chris Hurt had to say earlier in the week in his podcast about the beef cattle production in the United States, and those numbers that came out showed that, of course, there was some liquidation in the process, but he looked across some of those areas you were just talking about, the southeast, which you didn't suggest, but the southern plains and the central plains, saying that weather conditions in those areas were so dry that they didn't have much availability of pasture, and that was driving what he thought was a good portion of the liquidation that happened in the beef cattle. And I suppose maybe they're turning their attention to soybeans at this point because they don't have a beef cattle crop to put on those acres.
You had asked a couple weeks ago on a commodity week if we had bought enough acres. Is the price high enough in new crop to buy enough acres? And my stance was then and still is that yes, we have if you don't monkey around with the bean-corn ratio too much because of things just like that. I think we're at a price level because of what Mother Nature's done to us in this country. We're at a price level where producers are going to have to make a decision. My clients in Kansas, west of Kansas City, my clients in Texas, all of them had not gotten anything this past week and were sitting with a lot of cold temperatures. And the people in Kansas that did get anything maybe had a half an inch of snow. So I think this is where maybe at the end of the week, Dave and I were talking about this morning, the end of this week, maybe Chicago, because they had a blizzard, they started to think about the planting and whether we were going to be on time with corn because we might have a lot of snowpack, a lot of melting to do, and it may be below normal in terms of temperatures. And I think that maybe triggered some buying late in the day in the corn, as did a less fear of what was going on in the Egyptian markets. And the crude oil broke on ideas that Mubarak was going to throw in the towel. And that gave us new weekly highs, new contract highs in the corn for the March contract. So I think the trade is starting to come around to the new crop acres. I think the one last thing that I looked at this week that I thought was really important to hold over to next week and watch and see what happens was that the port strike in Argentina was called off by the government. The government said, you two go to the drawing table, figure out negotiations, and get the ports back and running. They did that, but the beans really didn't break. And I think most of that may have been due to the fact that we haven't gotten the report numbers out from next week's report numbers. It seems like the trade doesn't want to break hard before next week's report, especially in the corn, but even in the beans, too.
We thank you for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Have a good weekend.
Hey, you too. Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon.
The 21st annual All-Day Agricultural Outlook meeting is sure to attract a crowd. Among those presenting March 8th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, Murray Wise from Murray Wise Associates, Joe Vaklovic from MF Global, Roy Huckabee from the Lind Group, and Tom Fritz from EFG. Avoid the long registration line by calling 800-528-7980. The cost of the ticket is $20 and includes a continental breakfast and lunch. When you register with your major credit card, we'll mail your tickets good for our VIP line. The number to call is 800-528-7980.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the House Agriculture Committee will meet next Thursday to discuss rules being developed by the U.S. futures regulator. House Agriculture Chairman Frank Lucas says that the CFTC is moving too quickly on rules and in what he calls a, quote, irrational sequence. Intercontinental Exchange is toughening requirements to trade large quantities of cotton. The ICE says it will institute a new rule that will require market participants wanting to buy or sell more than 300 contracts during the so-called notice period to prove it is, quote, economically appropriate. The move is aimed at limiting speculative trading. The ICE already has a 300-contract limit, but previously did not require those seeking exemptions to justify their actions. France will push for measures to ensure food security at the next group of G20 meetings. France will stress the need for more transparency on global food stock levels, as well as for curbs on food price speculation. As this year's G20 president, France sets the agenda for gatherings of the top 20 economies. The FAO said on Thursday that its food price index hit an all-time high in January. Bangladesh's state grains buyer plans to increase the volume of rice and wheat in tenders to speed up imports and build stocks in the face of record global food prices. The government, under increased pressure for failing to contain prices, is seeking to import 2.2 to 3 million tons of rice and wheat in the year to June 30th, up from around 550,000 tons in the previous year. In a complicated parliamentary procedure, the Senate adopted an amendment that would repeal new Form 1099 reporting requirements enacted under the health care reform law. The amendment would eliminate the requirements that, beginning in 2012, all businesses would be required to an information return for any payment totaling $600 or more in a calendar year to a single payee. Farmers complained about the cost and time-consuming nature of the new record-keeping. The U.S. Meat Export Federation expects U.S. beef exports to grow conservatively by more than 10% next year and the year after. Market access continues to be the limiting factor in the export growth. U.S. beef export volume was up 18% last year, but the value of exports was up 30%. Tyson Foods' quarterly earnings surged 86% as it sold beef and pork at much higher prices. First quarter earnings at the world's largest meat company were $298 million, or 78 cents a share, compared with $160 million, or 42 cents a share a year earlier. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. He also puts together our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. It's scheduled for the 8th day of March. That's a Tuesday. And we're taking pre-registration tickets right now. You can call this number, 800-528-7980, to reserve your place for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. That's over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. One of the best marketing meetings all year long. The All-Day Ag Outlook meeting is March the 8th, a Tuesday. The number to call to reserve your $20 ticket, 800-528-7980. Now up next, foliar fungicides are being pushed for the health of the corn plant. But what does that really mean in terms of disease control? University of Illinois Extension plant pathologist Carl Bradley has been running experiments on fungicides in corn. He wanted to know when it paid to apply them and when it did not. His data from 2008 to 2010 says about half the time applying a fungicide to a corn crop will result in an 8-bushel yield increase. It's probably not enough.
When I pull all of that together, the overall yield average is about 8 bushels an acre, which is not bad. But one thing you have to consider is that an average is just an average. That doesn't mean you're going to get that every time. Sometimes you might be above that. Sometimes you might be below that. So how do you get consistent yield response? And that's really when we're looking at disease control. So I had summarized our data by the level of disease that was present. And when we're getting to virtually no disease or very low disease pressure, we would have profitable applications of only maybe 6%, 7%, 8%, something like that.
Higher disease levels in the corn result in a much better return on the fungicide investment. For instance, when disease on the ear leaf covered at least 15% of the area, then 75% of the time the fungicide application resulted in at least a 10-bushel yield increase per acre.
Scouting, we recommend to go out prior to tassel and take a look at the third leaf below the ear or higher, but really focus right in that level. And if you're finding disease present on at least half the plants that you're looking at, also consider a little bit about how susceptible they are to some of the diseases, then that might be a good trigger when it's present on the third leaf below the ear prior to tasseling on 50% of the plants.
As far as timing to the fungicide application, it should be done about the time of silking or just at tassel emergence. An earlier application is not recommended. This is because disease pressure that dramatically affects yield doesn't come until later in the life cycle of the corn plant. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Friday afternoon on Thursdays every other week, and I forgot to read this yesterday. The USDA's Illinois AMS, that's Ag Marketing Services, releases the Illinois Production Cost Report. Mostly it deals with fertilizer costs, so we try to get those out to you. Just picked up that particular report. Here's what it says. As of the last 2 weeks, anhydrous ammonia has gone up in price $2.09 a ton. Averaged across the state of Illinois, $780.06. Range from $7.70 to $8.10, $46.00, or urea at $4.91.30 was up 41 cents. Liquid nitrogen, that's 28, was at $3.38. It was up $2.06. DAP at $6.69.81, up $1.72. MAP at $7.07.50. This is an average across the state, up $6.50. Potash at $5.66.61, up 89 cents. And diesel fuel for less than 1,000 gallons ranged from $2.91 to $3.15. The average was $3.03 a gallon, up 2 cents. Time now to take a look at the cash grain market. On the phone line with us from the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. Out of Ludlow, Illinois, is Bruce Bostard. He serves as the general manager of the company, and it's 10 elevator operations. Hi, Bruce. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
No, I'm very well. So tell me, how does the big snowstorm like we had impact operations in an elevator?
Sometimes we do some juggling around on who makes it in and answers a phone, and probably means you get a less competent person like me looking stuff up rather than Twyler or Jackie, who could find the information out a lot quicker.
Oh, there you go. Oh, you must have done something bad, dude.
The bruising will go down.
Okay, so tell me what it was what it was that you saw this week in the marketplace and how the cash market reacted, if anything, to the trade in Chicago.
To me, the interesting thing was this week, and despite the board running up and some setting some new high numbers, we've actually seen the basis firm up a little bit. Corn a penny better old and new, beans three better old crop, a penny better new. And overall, since the big surge of movement right after the first of the year when the basis broke, it's come back pretty well. So in the face of the type of rally we've seen, I think that's impressive.
It is it's impressive for the cash market to follow so closely behind a market that's moving quickly to the higher side. Can it continue to follow it up, and is demand really there to do it?
So far, it looks like the demand is there. A lot of it is, I think, that our end users are still seeing their prices go up as the grain goes up. So if you take DDGs and the ethanol price up in the face of corn, it makes it harder to ration. If you see cattle prices go up, it makes it harder to ration. So as long as we can see that passing through, it sure helps.
What are your bids for the day?
We are at 661 on nearby corn and 1412 on soybeans. I have trouble with those. 832 on new crop wheat. How about that?
All right. Hey, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That is Bruce Bostard. He's with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company. Out of Ludlow, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. I'll be back in just 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center.
It's National Stuffed Mushroom Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1790, John Bachman was born, a naturalist and Lutheran minister. He wrote some of the text for John James Audubon's albums of birds and mammals of North America. He also published his own works on botany, agriculture, and southern animals. In 1810, Alexis Soyer was born, a French chef and author. He opened kitchens in Ireland during the famine to sell food at one-half price, and he was also the inventor of several stoves and kitchen utensils. In 1824, J.W. Goodrich introduced rubber galoshes, thin rubber boots to fit over shoes during inclement weather. In 1906, Clyde W. Tombaugh was born, an American astronomer. He discovered Pluto in 1930. Born on a farm near Streator, Illinois, his first telescope was made from old farm equipment parts. In 1930, candy maker Frank C. Mars of Minnesota introduced the Snickers bar. And in 1941, Roy J. Plunkett received a U.S. patent for Teflon. He discovered it by accident in 1938. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Friday afternoon. Steve Ilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, funded in part by NOAA, is now on the phone line with us to take a look at the weather forecast. Hi, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Can you look back at this big weekend weather for me first?
Well, it was a pretty wild one, as we all know. We had a major storm move through the Midwest here, and really affected the eastern two-thirds of the country practically in some way or another. And we've got some pretty deep snow cover over Illinois. As of this morning, snow is as much as 2 feet deep in places. In fact, we get up toward northeastern Illinois there, and it is 2 feet. And generally, north of a line from a little bit north of St. Louis to about Kankakee, the snow is probably a good 12 inches or more. The highest amount I think we found here in Illinois is like just 23.9 inches up in Highland, Illinois, up in Lake County. But there were quite a few amounts over 20 inches with that amazing storm on Tuesday and Wednesday. And, of course, further south we had sleet here in east central Illinois, a lot of it, which was really difficult to deal with in some respects. And then further out south we had a lot of ice. So, and now we've got cold weather, which is actually going to moderate a little bit in the next couple of days.
Before we get to the cold weather, do you know by comparison how often a storm of this size or magnitude makes its way across the Midwest or Illinois in general?
Not offhand, but when you think about it, we don't get storms of this magnitude very often. The last big one like this was 99. So you'd say maybe once every 10 or 15 years that you get a storm of this size and magnitude. It affects such a large area as well.
Okay, so we've got a bunch of snow on the ground, and I guess that means it's going to get cold when it's clear, right?
It will tend to do that, yeah. It's going to be tough to get rid of this snowpack very quickly. One, we're not seeing any big, huge warm-ups of any extended period over the next week to 10 days or so. And we'll probably actually add to the snow cover, especially over southern and central and southern Illinois this weekend. We have a system that's actually spreading snow northeastward from the Gulf states. It's snowing in Arkansas and southwestern Missouri. And overnight tonight and early tomorrow, that'll actually looks like it'll spread up through Illinois and Indiana, at least through the southern two-thirds of Illinois and maybe the southern half to two-thirds of Indiana. So areas, especially the southern halves of both states, could pick up an inch or two of snow, maybe a little bit more in spots. And then really we're not going to get out of it. There's going to be some light snow again on Sunday, and then maybe some light snow or flurries on Monday. It did look like we might get into another system about Wednesday or Thursday of next week, but the latest model runs keep that south of here right now, but we'll have to keep an eye on it. But nevertheless, it's going to be cold. We got temperatures in the 20s today, which is a relative heat wave compared to earlier in the week, but temperatures are really going to drop off sharply later this week when more Arctic air flows into Illinois.
Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Hey, Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Please do visit willag.org to listen to Commodity Week. Our guest this week, Tom Schuff, floor trader.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers.